Rebic, Rafa, tira, gol! Rafael Leão, oggi segna Leão, la mia giornata è iniziata così, oggi
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrood.
Hey guys, glad to be back. Early morning, recording time, got my coffee, got my rants ready, so we're good to go.
Locked and loaded, Monday morning. Yeah. Love it. Just the two of us this week. Madison unfortunately can't make it. Jan will hopefully be back in the fold soon once he starts his new job and gets back from a vacation in Italy. And, you know, Stefano works a 9-to-5, so this is where we're at the moment, just the two of us for this. But we've got two games to recap, nothing to preview because the international break is coming up. But as we will talk about, the game that happened last night is a great way to go into the international break with a winning feeling. But what's no doubt been the main story of the last couple of games has been refereeing mistakes. But what we'll do is talk about the Atletico Madrid game first and get all that ranting out of the way. And then we can focus on the Atalanta one where thankfully the mistakes didn't end up costing us the 3 points. But yeah, Atletico Madrid at San Siro, our first home Champions League game for 7 years. Obviously, it was a sellout crowd of the 50% capacity that was allowed. It was an electric atmosphere when the players were walking out, lining up, hearing that Champions League music again. It was just absolutely magical. And for the first 35 minutes, the performance totally matched it. You know, we were on it. We were absolutely flying around the pitch. The press was working so well. We had Atletico really on the ropes, and I don't think that Simeone's side are used to quite the battering that they were getting, even if they haven't had the best of starts to the season. And we took the lead through Rafael Leão, and it was a goal that we totally deserved, I think it would be fair to say. And from there, it just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, so we had that first goal, and I think it was... what minute did the goal come, do you remember?
Our goal was on about 34 minutes.
Okay, so then it was... 13th minute was when Kessié got his first card, I believe.
I'm way out with that. 20 minutes and the red card came on half an hour.
Okay.
And he was okay.
Yeah, so Kessié had his first yellow card, which was extremely harsh. It was the first challenge from anyone in the game, I believe. It was a very slight shirt tug. It wasn't a countering player, so it's not a straight yellow. You know, it was a very small shirt tug. It wasn't like he pulled him to the ground. It just was like a... We'll tug to pull him back. I've seen yellow cards given for it when it's late in a game, when it's been pretty, you know, I don't know what the word is, but, you know, when it's a game with
hostile.
Full fouls. Yeah, a hostile game. This one was early. There wasn't much going on yet. A warning would have sufficed, but nonetheless, he got a card, and it was soft, but it is what it is. Then we score the goal. We go up, and then right around 34 minutes, I believe, Kessié got a second yellow. Again, no warning. It was a second challenge. It was a stamp. It was a card, absolutely. But he was playing the ball. It wasn't like he was, you know, doing anything malicious. And he was off, and that really changed the game. You know, from there, there's so much you have to change with how you're playing, who's on the field, your future substitutions, and how your opponent's going to play. So that really changed it. Luckily, we were able to go into halftime absolutely the better team. You know, Leão almost scored a bicycle kick from just outside the box. It was called offside and it hit the crossbar. But when you look at it in the replay, it looks like he might have been on. So, you know, bad call, but it didn't go in. So it's not the end of the world there. And then the end of the world did come after that. We had to make a lot of changes because the red card. It is what it is. We knew that going into it. But when you sit back like that, when you put 7 or 8 men in the box, you're inviting pressure, and a team like Atletico, who knew they had to score, who knew they had to come forward, it's you're basically putting the timer on yourself for how long can you last. And to do this game of can we last an hour out of 90 minutes, it's a losing battle. You're not going to do it, and I was frustrated the whole time. I know there's justifications as to why you're doing it, but I really hated to see that. I thought we looked a lot better even with 10 men when we were still pushing, trying to play our game. Granted, they brought on every attacker under the sun. You know, towards the end of the game, they had about 7 forwards on, and we had 10 defenders on. So it was an interesting dynamic there. Let's talk about that penalty that they got, though.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I mean, as you say, I'll just briefly mention it because I've got the subs up here. They managed to bring on, they brought on Rodrigo De Paul, João Félix, Antoine Griezmann, Thomas Lemar, and Renan Lodi, who I thought Lodi was really good, actually, when he came on. That's pretty deep. That's some good options off the bench. Griezmann got the equaliser. As you say, the penalty came right at the end. It was a proper sucker punch because I think if we'd have seen that game out for a draw that was probably deserved based on how we played in the opening 30 minutes and the battle that we showed in the remaining 60 minutes, then it would have been a much more wide open group, you know, with Porto on Atletico on 2 points. It would have just kept everything nice and open. But as it turns out, that goal could potentially cost us. You know, that penalty call could cost us. And I don't know what else to say other than it's a disgrace, to be honest. Like, we're now, 6 days on from the incident happening, and it still makes me angry, but I've kind of, you know, put all the anger out there at the decision, and I'm still totally baffled by how it can be allowed, how such incompetence can be allowed at the highest level. If it happens in Serie A, we're almost like, you know, it's Italian refs. They make quite a lot of mistakes generally. But for it to happen in the Champions League in a game between, one of the biggest games that night, it just goes to show for me that the system that's currently in place isn't working.
In the final minute as well. I mean, that was a game-winning decision, and the referee knew it. And he did it. It went to VAR. It was being checked for a very long time. But he himself never went and looked at it. No. So I don't know if the VAR chief said it's good or if this guy just went off his ego and said, no, my call is correct. But it was wrong. It hit, I can't remember the Atletico player.
Lemar.
It hit Lamar's hand. He palms it up into the arm of Balotelli. Oh, it was Kalulu? Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see all of our players immediately call for a handball. If we're the ones committing it, why are we ratting ourselves out? You know, like it doesn't make sense that everyone on our team calls for a handball and then the ref stops play and says, you're right, it was a handball on you. And like, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And you know what, the goal before it, while it was a legitimate goal, we have to call out Romagnoli on that because he had a great game prior and he had a great game the week before, but he was ball watching hard. He didn't make any attempt to intercept that ball. He didn't make any attempt to block Griezmann to stop it. He just kind of let it happen. And I mean, that's
against other forwards, that probably doesn't mean a goal. You know, I know Griezmann has not had the best last couple of years. He's still ultimately a player that you can bring on who has the quality to change a game. And it was a nice fish. But you're right, Romagnoli, for all the good work. I won't say he completely 100% undid it with that moment, but my argument with going down to 10 men is not necessarily that it's all physically tiring. It clearly was physically tiring for the players to be a man down for that long and to have to chase shadows, have to chase the ball, not really have any sustained pressure in Atletico's half, so you're just constantly facing wave after wave of attack. But I think that what that does is it wears you down psychologically as well. To the extent where moments and mistakes like that are more likely to happen. And teams like Atletico are going to take advantage of that. It's just disappointing because, you know, it's all ifs and buts and whatabouts. But if we'd have just seen that out, you know, if we can just keep another attack at bay, then I think they'd have really started to panic. And that's when maybe getting another goal on the counter comes into the equation. But I think the substitutions that Pioli made were based on energy levels rather than any kind of tactical approach, because it didn't seem to make an awful lot of sense to bring a half-hurt Giroud on in that situation when we needed pace and ball control up the other end. He couldn't really do an awful lot. I won't say he stood like a plank, but he certainly didn't move around a lot. Perhaps he was brought on to defend set pieces as well. That's a possibility. But there were certainly a couple of the substitutes where I think he's just bringing on fresh legs for the sake of it. just to try and get over the line. 97 minutes, you know, it's a long, long time to be defending backs against the wall. And we couldn't do it. But yeah, I mean, I said this in the chat after the game. As much as I admire the spirit of the performance, and I think that the first 30 minutes is what we should take from that game, you know, how we dominated them 11-11 and they couldn't cope with the intensity. It is frustrating, this constant narrative now of, you know, we're proud, but we lost. You know, the Man United Europa League semi-final, the knockout game. Yes, we played well. We were the better team over two legs. We were missing players through injury, but we lost. You know, we got...
Well, that was another game we got
decisions
against us.
Yeah.
It's a trend.
Messi volley. And then the Liverpool away game in the Champions League, you know, we played well. We got ourselves ahead, but we lost the game. The Juventus away performance, we were the better side, particularly in the second half. We had late chances to win it, but we didn't. You know, the key moments in seasons that we've had over the last few months, we've had a fantastic start to the season domestically, don't get me wrong. But those key moments, it just feels like we haven't been getting over the line. And in this case, the Atletico Madrid game, it's definitely due to the refereeing. But it's just a bit of a frustrating narrative, that's all. Because I think with a win, the way that we were playing after those 30 minutes, we'd have gone on and won the game comfortably. I do believe that. And it would have sent a bit of a shockwave, I think, through the rest of the competition, because people would have looked at us and said, yeah, they are back. You know, they can compete with teams that have form for going deep into the knockout stages. But now we're in a position where we were a goal up with 6 minutes to go. We've lost the game. We're on no points after two games, and it becomes really difficult to qualify. And unfortunately, that's the difference, not only in confidence for the players, although they bounced back well last night, but it's the difference in millions of euros as well, potentially getting that point. You get like cash sums per point that you pick up in the Champions League.
Right, right.
So that's a costly mistake in every sense of the word. So, yeah, proud but deflated is how I would describe myself after that game.
I would say furious. I was so upset after that game. Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch a single game on Wednesday because we played Tuesday. I didn't watch any of the Champions League on Wednesday. I didn't watch any Europa or conference on Thursday. I didn't watch any league games on Friday or Saturday. I didn't watch anything on Sunday except for our game. I needed a mental break from the game. It was that defeating. I mean, like you said, being a goal up against a team who just won the Spanish league last season with 4 minutes left in the game and then to magically lose it, all because of a referee intervention. I mean, it's crushing. There's just no way around it. You know, it hurts. And
yeah, there's no answers, is there? There's no way you can turn and feel some kind of solace from it, because as much as I want to say it's 100% the official's fault, we've just touched on the Romagnoli error there. And you think if he could have just switched on for that moment, we might be talking about a draw. We might be talking about a win even, and like the most heroic performance. Fine margins in games, and unfortunately they went against us. But the good news, I suppose, is that Sakir, the referee, and the VAR chief have both been suspended by UEFA. But that doesn't give us much comfort, does it? Because what the hell are we meant to do with that?
Right. I mean, you know? So if the organizing body acknowledges that they made a mistake, that was not a handball, it should not have been called, and they're going to suspend the referees responsible for it, why does the result stand? You know, and I'm not saying let's petition for a replay or something, but like, there's got to be a way that when refereeing errors decide a game and the body controlling it says they're wrong, there's got to be something that they could do. And I'm not saying, maybe I am saying take the goal back. I don't know, but there's got to be a way to make it right without...
It absolutely.
I don't know what to do, but there's a debate that needs to be had. Yeah.
If you retrospectively go back and change the result, right. I don't think anyone would realistically call for that. But at the same time, yeah. So what does it matter? They won't be able to officiate Young Boys v Villarreal or whatever they were down to do next week. I mean, what good does that do to us?
Yeah.
I would.
At the very least, we should get the financial. The prize money for a draw, you know?
Yeah, so something like that. Because, you know, it's not a victimless crime
basically. No, it's not.
You know, we've got the shit end of the stick, and suspending them doesn't do anything for us. You know, it just doesn't. But I don't know what the solution is, and this will rage on in sport for a long time, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Especially,
I mean, come the final day of group stage, say we finish third and mm-hmm. Atletico gets second, and they beat us by 2 points.
Yeah, or I mean, a point even, and yeah, a draw would have been big. Oh yeah, 2 points. Yeah, but yeah, frustrating, wasn't it? And I was, well, actually, we'll do tops and flops before we transition into a much nicer game to cover. So yeah, I kind of wiped this game out of my memory now a little bit. but I do remember thinking to myself, all we can really do is judge on the first 30 minutes, weirdly, because that was when the game was, you know, there was parity in it.
Right.
Liao and yep. Brahim were the electric ones, without a doubt. You know, they were at the heart of pretty much everything good we had going. I thought that Atletico would deal better with Brahim because they kind of knew him, or they know his type of player, you know, mm-hmm. With him being Real, but also there's quite a lot of those players in La Liga. Jelks is not a million miles off in his playing style, you know, with the low center of gravity, goal threat, quick changes of direction, all that. But they didn't. He found spaces between the lines, and Atletico seemed pretty fixed in their two banks. And he did find some joy down the middle there. And in doing that, I think he dragged defenders in a bit, and that created the space for Liao to roam just all over the final third. You look at where he picked up the ball for his goal on the right side of the box. It shows that he sensed, like a good predatory winger would do, he sensed the chance to get on the ball anywhere in a dangerous area and capitalise on what's been a good run of confidence for him, really, and score. So yeah, let me think of flop while you do top.
Yeah, I was just gonna kind of echo that and say Liao was my top. You know, he could have had a brace with that incredible overhead kick, which would have been goal of the season for us, no doubt. But he was everywhere. He did everything right. For my flop, I'm gonna go Romagnoli. Simply because you don't make that glaring of a defensive error that late in a game this big. You know, you could say Kessié for getting the red card, but I think both yellows were extremely harsh, especially given the fact that you saw the exact same challenge that saw Kessié getting sent off on Tonali, and nothing was called, nothing at all.
Not even a foul.
There was no call whatsoever. All of our protests were ignored. I think we were even threatened with more yellow cards because of the protest. You know, I'm not going to say there was like some conspiracy or anything, but the guy was Turkish. Maybe he's a big Çalhanoğlu fan. Maybe he's mad at us. I'm being serious.
I think Turkey hate him at the moment too now.
Yeah, I don't know. I heard that, and it just seemed like people trying to like, don't be mad at us. We don't like him either. You know, just dumb shit you see in football Twitter. But yeah, I don't know. F that guy. That's mine.
I had to look back at the player ratings. I've kind of cheated on this one, but Kessié got the lowest score.
Sure. I mean, that makes sense.
But I'm going to stay away from that and say actually Florenzi. And I feel a bit
bad. That's a good answer.
Because he's now had a knee operation, which we should briefly mention. He's out for a month. He's had the, you can say it, can't you? The arthroscopy thing? I don't know how to say it. I can like type it out, but I wouldn't know how to say it. Keyhole surgery, isn't it, in the knee, basically.
Yeah. You got me trying to throw in an R in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them, anyways, had one of those, which Zlatan had.
Zlatan and Calabria had it as well, didn't he?
Yeah. So he clearly wasn't at 100%, but he did lose his man for that first goal. And overall, just probably wasn't what we were looking for off the bench, you know, playing him a bit higher up, which is a shame. But yeah, it's really tough to draw any massive conclusions from a game like that where it's conditioned so early on by refereeing mistake. But yeah, that's it. No points from two games. Percentage chances, what would you say are our hopes of going through?
I know we just spent the last 20 minutes being doom and gloom, but I don't think they're that low. The way I'm looking at it, just based on, Yeah, we played poor against Liverpool, but we found our footing and were strong in the second half. We obviously turned it around towards the end of the first half there. So I think that, as well as the fact that we absolutely dominated Atletico while it was 11v11, and the fact that Liverpool is kind of running away with the league right now, we have back-to-back against Porto next. I think if we can get 6 points from that, Liverpool keep winning, and we get, you know, at least 4 points between them and Atletico in the return legs, I don't see why we can't get second. And I don't think that's a far-fetched thought process either. I think it's very likely that that happens. I mean, Liverpool look unstoppable, and like, just based off what Liverpool did to us and what we did to Atletico, I don't see Atletico beating Liverpool. So I think Liverpool's going to probably clean sweep the group. Hopefully they draw against us in the return, give us that extra point, and that'll do it for us.
Could be that if they've already won 5 out of 5, as we kind of mentioned last week, if they've won 5 out of 5, they won't need to play a full-strength squad against us, especially given that they're in a domestic title race. You know, they want to keep fighting on multiple fronts.
Well, remember, they didn't play a full-strength squad against us in the beginning either. Yeah, you know, it was a pretty weak lineup. Origi, Sané was on the bench.
The front three was questionable, wasn't it?
But, yeah.
I really do think we can beat Porto home and away. But it's a different thing, can and will, because the Champions League obviously brings the best out of teams like Porto. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but like the sum of their parts is not near what Juve's was that time they played them in the knockouts, but they beat them because they're well drilled and they're a hard to beat team, home and away, no doubt. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that we win both games against Porto at all. But if we can win the first one away from home, then I think that'll give us the belief that we can come home and do it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, if we're on 6 points after 4 games, the likelihood is that we'll be in the top two of the group. And then it's on the others. It's on Atletico. Porto would be out at that point. It's on Atletico to overturn the deficit. So
And they play their back-to-back as well. You know, there's a good chance that, well, not a good chance. In fact, that there's no chance. But we might be second after our second Porto game, you know. If Liverpool win, or if they draw both of them and we get our two wins against Porto, there we are. We're in second. It comes down to that last game.
Yeah, and all that good stuff to come, man. I would rather finish fourth than third, I'll be honest.
Yes.
I think I'm going to say no. I mean, because I think we have a realistic chance, potentially.
I think we could win it, especially with the way the new formatting is. There's not a round of 32. So it would be the second place team in all the group stages of Europa would play the teams dropping down from Champions League. So we immediately get an easier round of 16 tie in Europa League. And I just don't think there's any teams in that competition right now that hold a candle to us.
Oh, wait until it's Real Madrid.
Are they?
Real Madrid might drop in.
Okay.
But or Shakhtar. No. I mean, there's some good teams that can drop in. I did read something saying that Barcelona are the bookies' favourites to win the Europa League, which is obviously the massive presumption there is that they finish third in their group and drop out. And there you go. But they have lost their opening two games quite unceremoniously, 3-0, both of them. Let's see. Fun and games. Not out of it yet, but that was a hammer blow. From a hammer blow into something a lot more positive, I suppose. Last night in Bergamo, I was a little bit fearful for this game, I will say, because I thought that we might be as much mentally drained as physically drained after that result on Tuesday night. I know Atalanta played 24 hours later against Young Boys, though, so it wasn't exactly as demanding a game, and they won that. I thought it was a tough ask for us to go to Bergamo and win. Atalanta haven't really been their usual ruthless selves so far this season. I think they were sat in second place by the time the game kicked off last night. But that's not only one of our best away performances under Pioli in terms of being clinical and seizing control of the game right from the first minute, literally, but also potentially the most flattering 3-2 defeat that Atalanta have had in the last few years, because they didn't deserve for that to be a one-goal game.
Yeah, you know, like, it's frustrating because I know the result was 3-2, but just how we played and the fact that, again, they scored two goals in the 86th and, like, 92nd minute, my mind still says that was a 3-0 victory. which I guess is, you know, a better, you know, because sometimes you'll get like a draw and say like, oh, we lost that game. But this one, I still feel like we kept the clean sheet, even though we didn't. And we definitely have to discuss that because it's frustrating. But it was funny. I was at the bar with a bunch of guys from Twitter and Bader from Bader Ball on Twitter. You've probably heard him rant about all kinds of things. But we're all sitting there, and right before kickoff, I jokingly said, I was like, all right, we're scoring in 15 seconds. Well, it was 28, but I was very happy with that. We were screaming. Yeah. Obviously, everyone was, the whole world. And then when did we get the second goal? It wasn't
– just before like, halftime.
Yeah, Tonali, he stole the ball away, one-man counter, incredible goal. 43rd
perfect
minute.
Times to score, isn't it?
Yeah, going 2-0 up at halftime, and we were ecstatic. That I was like, all right, we need one more, and then that plus the 2-0 from the end of last season, that's our revenge for our 5-0 loss. So
yeah,
and we had that for a very long time, and I thought we got it. Yeah. Let's talk about my boy Macias here, because
dive straight in.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm a fan of Macias, and everyone else should be too. Those goals are not his fault whatsoever. First off, take out the penalty, take out, you know, the challenge, everything. There's no reason we should be attacking our attacking midfielder for defensive mistakes. You don't critique center backs on how many goals they score. So why are we critiquing attacking midfielders on their slide tackles? That's not a thing. He shouldn't be in that situation in the first place. If you want to get mad at anyone, get mad at Balotelli for losing his man, and be proud of our number 10 for sprinting his ass back to try and win that ball. And he got fouled, and it wasn't called, and that's what led to the second goal. The whole team stopped playing because they're like, yo, our boy's down. He got fouled. But again, the referee's an asshole. Doesn't call it. Second goal. First goal was a handball. According to the rules, it is not a handball. It deflected off It deflected off Tomori's foot into Macias' hand at point-blank range. Like, yes, it was up, but he was sliding. No one slides down with their hands behind their back. This isn't the diving Olympics. No one does that. Your hand's going to be out. Where do you want it to be? It's an inch away from the where it just deflected. Like, you can't get mad at him for that. Also, he's making a sliding challenge in the box. Why is he there in the first place? He shouldn't have to be, but yet he's in that situation because his teammate let him down. So don't get mad at Macias for that. None of that's his fault. Also, he created the third goal almost entirely on his own. He made the first pass. He ran all the way up. He was in an offside position, and his knowledge of that allowed him to create the dummy, which stopped everyone running because they thought Macias was going to get it. Well, Liao comes in, top bin. So Macias is maybe the hero, because without him coming on, we don't score that third goal, and it's 2-2. Who knows?
I might play devil's advocate here and say I would have given that third goal as an offside. Now, I know he didn't touch the ball, Macias, but I'd argue that he was still impacting play by standing there with the two defenders who were trying to play the ball, but I don't know.
I wouldn't have been shocked, to be honest, if it got caught off, because I saw it and I was like, ooh.
He almost like did an NBA-style screen. Yeah. Now, like, by putting himself out of the way, but then I would say, is that out of the way? But for the avoidance of any flame wars that ensue in the comments, I don't actually believe it was an offside. It's just the kind of thing that would have gone against us the way things have been recently.
Yeah.
But no, I totally agree with you. I don't see how you can... It's agendas, isn't it? It's people who were underwhelmed by his signing in the first place. How you can write a player off before they've kicked a ball for us and not support them, I don't know. But some people chose to do that. And then they were almost waiting for the debut and for him to make any kind of discernible mistakes, half mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you cannot pin either of those goals on him. He was definitely fouled for the second goal. The replays, the slow-mo showed the contact. How that wasn't looked at, I do not know. But I'm annoyed about the three defenders that were between whoever it was who sent it across goal to Pasalic, who didn't cut it out. It wasn't a whipped ball.
And remember that counterattack only began because Rebicu had a terrible game, passed the ball directly to an Atalanta player. I mean, it wasn't even close to being completed. It was a slow ball, and it went straight to the guy that was in the middle of him and whoever he's passing it to. But let's also not forget that, you know, you look at fan favorites in Bakayoko and Benacer. Benacer's first ever game for us was so bad that he cried on the pitch at the end of the game.
Yeah, it was
Bakayoko almost got jeered out of the team by January because he was so bad that first half of the season. There's so many great players that have played for us that have had bad first performances. Not everyone comes in.
What about Sandro Tonali's bad first season?
And now he's the best midfielder of Italian descent at all, you know? Like, and then you look at, on the flip side of that, you look at guys like Fernando Torres, who, yes, had a terrible spell at Chelsea before coming, but he scored with his very first touch on the team and then did jack shit for the rest of his time at Milan. Like, you know, you can't judge someone off of 15, 20 minutes in their debut, who, mind you, he was out for a few months because he wasn't in proper shape anyways, which now you could say that's his fault, and entirely, yes, it is his fault. You should always be in game shape, no matter what time of year it is. But the reality is, he wasn't, so cut him a little bit of slack. You know, that's all I'm saying. Yeah. I think he looked good. I'm very biased because I hyped him up probably more than anyone should have, and I also have legitimate money on the line because I made bets that he's going to score at least 5 goals this season. So, you know, tic-tac or whatever it is. But...
Tic-tac. Yeah, that window's shortened a little bit with him taking a month to get up to
speed. Yeah.
Now, it was apparently that he had to redo his entire preseason, which I had read between the lines as him being unfit. But then something's come out like a couple of days before the game that said that he sustained an injury while he was doing his preseason stuff. And that's why it's took longer than expected, which might make sense, you know, getting used to the intensity and all that. But he's here now and he's here to contribute. And it's so important because I was worried that we'd run Brahim Diaz into the ground a little bit.
And he did look pretty tired, to be honest with you, this week.
But, you know, it's nice to have this international break now and Messias can spend a little bit more time at the training ground getting up to speed with everything. But I thought, apart from what happened in the defensive third, he was fantastic at the game management side of things, you know, just picking the ball up, dribbling into space, holding on to it, keeping possession, bringing his teammates into play. As you say, he had a hand in the third goal. I actually thought overall it was a good debut from him. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. If he's fit enough to maybe start that game against Hellas Verona, then it's the kind of game that you look at. But I'm sure he's going to get plenty of playing time because no doubt we'll have injuries. And just in that Sammy was basically being completely frozen out of the equation now. Because there has been chances for him to come on as a substitute, but he hasn't made a single appearance for us yet this season. So I think his days are very... Castillejo.
He played. He played 17 minutes against Cagliari.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he's got one appearance, and that's it so far.
Yeah.
So
he's got more minutes than Zlatan this season. Just saying.
Is that right?
I think so. How long was that? I thought he played 17 minutes. And
I don't know.
I'm going to check right now.
That's a good shout. But the good news is that after the international break as well, we should have 4 players back to full fitness in Ibra, who's not going to go to Sweden despite the fact that they called him up. Giroud, who hasn't been called up by France, so he gets 2 weeks to work at Milan.
He has 1 minute played this season against Cagliari. He came on in the 92nd minute with 2 minutes of added time.
Samu,
So
I didn't think that he played properly, but yeah. And then also Bakayoko and Krunic, who obviously are not internationally involved. Krunic hasn't gone because of injury, but those two should be back as well. Florenzi a couple of weeks after that, but the good news is on that front, he'll probably only miss 2-3 games, and he's not exactly been a huge component so far, so not as bad an absence to feel, but that would be good because it feels like we haven't had a clean bill of health for a long, long time. I don't expect it to last very long. We know how these things go. No doubt we'll have 7 injuries again by the time that we play Inter and Roma, whatever. But yeah, it's 3 points, 3 goals, and as I say, I don't think 3-2 is very reflective of the scoreline. In fact, we missed a couple of chances. Salamaca's...
right at the keeper. It was a great header, but it should have been anywhere but straight at him. You know, it could have been either side and it would have been a goal.
Fantastic cross, I will say that. Stood up an absolute gem, did Rebic. He didn't have a great game apart from that, but he should have got an assist to his name for that, without a doubt. And also, there was that one where Tonali put him in behind, and instead of shooting, he chose to chop back, despite the fact he had an open shot on his right foot. I didn't really understand that, but that was cut out. He could have had a couple Salamacas, but overall, his contribution again, in terms of work rate and the balance he brings to the right side, you know, you can never argue with that. He always puts a good shift in.
I actually thought this was a really bad game from him, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I thought he gave up the ball a lot. He made some incomplete passes. He got taken out multiple times. I thought he was extremely ineffective, and had he not tired. Had those that header and the other shot that went wide, I think we'd be talking about like him as our number one flop. And yeah, honestly, I'm probably still going to give it to him.
Yeah, we need to do tops and flops. Top for me, oh, this is a difficult one because there were a lot of good performances. Since I mentioned Kessié as a potential flop for the Atletico game, I must say that that was more his level.
Yes.
It wasn't a totally dominant performance like we have seen from him, like one-man band in midfield. But it was definitely a 7 out of 10 performance, and that's what we need to see more of from him. His agent, interestingly, was at the game last night, so I don't know if that is any sign of anything or if it's just because he knows Atalanta and Milan because that was his former club. I don't know. But that was a better performance from him. Mm. But I will give my top to Teo Hernandez. Those marauding runs, we saw them from the 20th second of the game where he picks it up from that position on the left side and just drives towards the edge of the 18-yard box, and it causes so many problems. Mm-hmm. The difference that we're already seeing this season is that he seems to know when to release the ball at the right time. Before he's overrun it, this time he's got it pretty much spot on. He got what I hope will go down as 2 assists, definitely 1, but he basically made 2 goals. But I don't know if you'll get that one for Calabria because it came back off the keeper.
Yeah, so there were no assists for the first 2 goals officially.
Right, so that's a shame. Yeah. But he'll get the assist for the third one.
Mm-hmm.
So I will give top to him, then you go.
I actually have criticism of Teo because you're right. He is most effective when he's making those marauding runs. He's got speed for days and he just runs straight through people. I felt this game, he stopped a lot and tried to out dribble people. He tried to do like trick and skill moves and get around players. And every time he did it, we lost possession or we had to make a pass back. And then it was killing counters. And he did that a lot more. And I saw it from Brahim as well. And there was someone else who did it that I was like, what are we doing? Like, just move, get the ball. Like, you're a cheetah. You run forward. When you stop, you become ineffective. Like, you are only effective when you're going forward. And he wasn't doing it as much as he should have been. He had more opportunities to do it. So I'm not going to give him my top. He still had a great game, but he's not my top. And Kessié created that first goal. And you could argue he created the third one as well.
Messias was the one who ran and ran.
I feel like he had some involvement in the second goal. And I know it was Tonali who won the ball back. So I don't know. Maybe he didn't. Maybe it was just the first goal.
Yeah, even still.
He had a great game, but I'm going to go with Tonali. Tonali looked unstoppable, and he got a goal that he completely created himself. He ran down the ball holder, pushed him back, and then just took the ball from him, ran straight to the keeper, and slotted it around him first time. I mean, he looked unstoppable, so Tonali's my top for sure.
Yeah, he was fantastic, and it was good to see as well because I think – potentially the two games that he struggled the most in have been the Champions League games, and I think that that's sort of a fair assumption, particularly at Anfield. It's going to be hard, in it, you know, with the intensity that you're facing in the crowd, and the standards are just so much higher. But in the league, he's just been absolutely outstanding, and that was just his latest fantastic performance. And for him to score a goal like that by pressuring, not committing a foul, which was really important. A lot of times in that situation, if that were Rebic pressing, for example, he'd push his man over from behind and that would be a free kick. But yeah, just to steal the ball and to finish with the composure of a centre forward as well, that was really good. So I agree with that. I think
he's finally realizing, well, maybe not so, because he's always said he's not Pirlo, but he's not trying to play like Pirlo anymore. He's playing like the Gattuso that he says he was. You know, he's playing much more physically, and it's working. He's realizing that he has the strength to push people off the ball, to win the ball back, to, you know, make these challenges, and now to score as well. So the sky's the limit for him. I think he's going to be a star for years to come.
Yeah, I said last night to the lads, I don't think that they're like a similar player at all. but I'm seeing more and more of Barella's kind of characteristics coming out of Tonali, on the attacking end, at least, you know. He's not frightened of getting stuck in at all. He has fantastic close control. He's not frightened to try and beat a man on the dribble. And now we're seeing some end product as well, with goals, assists, set piece delivery. So there's signs there that he could become the perfect all around box to box type midfielder. But as with everything, we can't, you know, can't slap on him of being the best Italian player or anything. We've just got to let him grow at his pace and can enjoy his development while it's ongoing the way it is.
Well, I'm actually going to use a little hyperbole then, since you just said, you know, we don't want to do that.
Don't do it.
I think it's pretty impressive that we have three of the four best midfielders in the league on our team. You know, what order you want to place them, go for it. But, you know, Bennacer, Tonali, and Kessié, the fact that one of those three world-class players are coming off the bench at any time for us to replace another world-class midfielder. Dude, we've had midfield problems since, like, probably the year after we won the Scudetto. So, I mean, to finally have it locked down the way we do is just so nice. It's so nice.
Oh, yeah, definitely, 100%. And there's something that's quite exciting about the way the midfield might be structured moving forward as well, when you consider Adli is having a good season for Bordeaux, and he's going to come in, and he's a similar technically gifted kind of, you know, battler of a player. So we're looking in pretty good shape on that front. Flop though. So this is a tough one. I've seen a couple of the papers, Tutto Sport and Gazzetta, give it to Kier, which I think is quite harsh in a game where we kept them at bay for 84 minutes. But then I think about it, and in that first half, he did struggle a little bit with Zapata. He got dribbled past that one time, and Menyo
in the very beginning, yeah.
Save. But I can't give it to him. So I'm going to have to give it to Salamakers, unfortunately. And that's not because he was awful. He just missed chances when the others didn't. So it's comparative.
Yeah.
It's hard to pick anyone else out, to be honest.
So Salamakers was going to be mine, but since you picked him, I'll go with Rebic. I just thought he was entirely ineffective, and it his fault for the second goal, regardless of all the stuff that happened after. I think he's at fault for that.
And I can understand people say. I just think a friend of mine watching, and he doesn't watch us all the time, but he's sort of saying, I thought Rich was meant to be good. And I get what he means with that, because when you watch him, like on the eye, he's not a pretty footballer to watch, you know? He tends to be more clinical, more effective when he's put in the right positions. But what I do admire always is his pressing, his pushing from the front. You know, he'll always put a shift in. But I also understand those who say that you need more from a striker than just work rate. And I think that that's correct. But he's bailed us out of some situations already this season, or at least scored some good goals already this season. So, you know, give him 2 weeks now, because he's not gone to the national team either, because the coach hates him. So 2 weeks of rest, perfect, you know. And then, yeah, we don't have a game to preview, because we'll do that in next week's episode, obviously. But Hellas Verona at home to come on the same weekend that Inter play Lazio and Roma play Juve. So there's some other games in the top seven going on.
That'd be nice. Who does Napoli play, since that's our only Scudetto challenge?
Napoli are definitely at home against someone easy, because I looked it up. They are at home against Torino.
Oh, so yeah, that's a win.
Easy, but yeah,
it's no, it so is that, easy. That's easy.
Yeah, that's a Sunday evening as well, though, so we could go top and put a bit of pressure on them, because we play on the Saturday night. Questions? Time, I guess, then. Yeah.
Yep.
Find the tweet. I should have had this set up. I'm gonna have to read them live, because I haven't had a chance to pick them out yet. Filippo Berio, sun-dried tomato pesto. Do you think the defenders watch Maldini compilations to study? that's fantastic. They don't have to watch compilations. They can just pick his brain on the training ground. You know, that's why I think Maldini, to me, he's never going to fully be a technical director. You know, he's not going to be behind a desk all day, is he? He's going to be at training, and he's going to be giving his 20-plus year knowledge of the game of football as a player, and as a very, very good player, to the younger lads. You know, we've seen the hand that he had in signing Teo Hernandez, for example, someone who probably looked up to him and idolised him when growing up. I think they will pick his brains regularly and say, what can I do better in this situation? Be that analysing video or in training drills or even before and after games. So, yeah, I think on a serious note, probably do.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, they go into the big conference room, they got the projector on the screen and they're all lined up and Pioli's get them tactics. And then you see Ballo walk in with his old VHS player because, you know, that's where his comps are on. And he just projects, do this, and it's just him, all of what he did. No, but in seriousness, like, I do think they probably picked his brain a lot, and I think Pioli's smart enough to be like, this is what we need to do, whether he's outright saying emulate Paolo, or if he's just saying, like, these are the things you should do, and those are things that Paolo did, then yes. But
I mean, two are basically...
Right, anyone who does good defending is doing what Paolo did because he never had bad defending. Yeah. So,
Michael Gambino, with the rise of Tonali, what's the best way to handle Kessié? Sell it in January or roll the dice and wait till the end of the season? And we also got a similar question from the Swedish podcast.
I think it'll be renewed by December, and if he's not, then we make moves in January because we just can't let more players walk for free. But I do think we're going to wrap this up really soon here. I think he wants to stay. I think his agent's kind of being a how can I put this politely?
A dickhead.
Yeah. So that's the infinite hurdle we always have to jump over. But I think Kessié wants to be here, and he's such a good player. Like I just said, he was one of the top four in the league, so there's no reason to get rid of him.
Yeah, the sooner that this is all sorted, the sooner that I feel like he will really sort of break out of the early season slump that he's been in. And I won't say that the two are intrinsically linked. I think that his questionable performances have been more down to fitness. You know, he didn't really have a break over the summer because he went to the Olympics with the Ivory Coast. He did that infamous interview and hasn't spoken since. But then also he sustained the injury that kept him out the first couple of games of the season, which I don't think helped. And he's just on a bit of a delay compared to everybody else. I refuse to believe, or rather I'm not naive enough to believe, that the moment that a professional footballer enters the field, they're thinking about their contract renewal when they play a bad pass or whatever. You know, I just don't think that happens.
Yeah.
So I don't put it down to that. But definitely in terms of just a media headlines point of view, I'm getting sick of it now. Let's resolve it one way or another. And we said, you know, that maybe as we did with Donnarumma, but sort of as the season's ongoing, this is the best offer that we can give you. This is what we believe you're worth. You sign it or we'll be finding a buyer for you in January. And that's the way that it's got to be handled. And sadly, I don't think it's the way it will be handled, because we've set our stall out now to have players while we're paying their salary, and they leave, and so be it. They did want to be part of our project. But, you know, some would say it's a risk selling a player like Kessié for less than his actual market value halfway through the season. But I don't know. My gut feeling is still sort of 60-40 towards him renewing, to be honest.
Yeah,
I don't think those words came from an empty place. I think he firmly believes that he wants to stay. But at the same time, if George Atangana, his agent, is moving the goalposts, then that's just not—it's just not fair on the management. You know, if we say we give you what you want, but now the demands have raised, it's just a cat and mouse game, and it shouldn't be like that. But at the same time, Kessié is his only important client. You know,
right.
So this is a way to kind of, it would be a way with the commission that he would get from a free transfer to another club. It'd be a way to kind of set himself up quite well financially. It's not like Raiola where he could do without the money. I don't know if, you know, Atangana's a rich man or anything like that, but no doubt it factors into it. He's thinking, I can get something out of this by moving him on. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think that's the way to handle it, though. We've just got to set a deadline and say we need an answer by now, otherwise we plan without you. Aziz asks, which positions do you think we should address in the January window to push us towards the title? I'll go first and answer it by saying Roman Ferver. Bring him in. He's got 5 goal contributions since he got introduced back into the fold at Brest, which is good for a player who didn't want to be there a few weeks ago. And I think he felt like he had one foot in the door with us over the summer until Brest decided to play hardball and pull him from the market. I think his asking price is still going to be 15 million or less, which should be within our reach, definitely. I'll be worried if it isn't. And I think that he can really make a difference in terms of adding depth to the attacking trident positions, mm-hmm. given that he can play attacking midfielder or in a three-man midfield or even out on the right side if needed. And he just, yeah, he looks a real player. And he fits perfectly in with our ethos as well of signing mm-hmm. young players, good value deals, and developing them. I think he should be the number one target.
Yeah, you know, you look at last season, we went into the winter window as the winter champions, and we didn't really bring anyone in. We brought in Meite, and, you know, we struggled with depth towards the second half of the season, and that's when we dropped off and Inter overtook us, and then they ultimately won the league. So if we're in a position where we're first or second come Christmas again, we absolutely have to make not just depth signings, but improvements. And the area we can make the biggest improvement is right wing. So Roman Favre, how do you say it?
Favre. Fervor is what Fervor, Freddy Londo, the native French speaker, told us. So I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, that works. So I think he should be a signing. Potentially recall Adley from our loan. I know it's a little shitty and shady business to do, but I mean, if we need it and we need a title push, like, he's our player, we could do that. You know, it just, so what if you burn a little bridge with a small French club? But that's besides the point. But I also think, in all seriousness, a striker might be a good idea. I know we brought in two this summer, but you look at Giroud, his back is broken more than, I'm not going to make a joke, but his back is bad. And Zlatan has played 17 minutes this season. If that's all the football we could get out of him, like, he needs to consider the end of his career. We need to consider life without him. We can't be, yes, I know there's this clause in his contract where we're paying him for what he does and not the full amount, but we don't know exactly what that amount that he's getting is. We know that it could be as much as 7 million this year. So we can't really be spending that much money on a player to not play. Mm-hmm. And I love him. He's my idol. He's my favorite player ever. But there comes a time, and if there's ever a time to replace him, it's when you absolutely need a striker to win the Scudetto. And, you know, if that's the position we're in come January, then yes, I think we risk it. You know, if we cut our deficit by like 100 million last year, now we have a bit of stadium revenue in there. If we could potentially go in for a January swoop for Vlahovic or something, and just like actually spend all of our possible money. I mean, if there's one thing, if we put it all in there, I'm okay with every egg in one basket if that's it.
Oh, that is a real balls on the table. Going all in to get a striker in January.
That firmly establishes your target as a Scudetto. Yeah. That's what we need to do. We, like, especially if we're out of Champions League, if we're out of the group stages, you know, there's money right there. That's opening up the coffers a little bit. Zlatan will understand. You know, he said he doesn't need someone to control his image. He's aware of what's going on. Like, he'll know. He can't do that. And he's not going to retire midseason. He'll still be there, and, you know, we'll get a few performances out of him, but Giroud's not the guy. Pellegrini's not the guy. You know,
I think maybe Giroud's been unlucky, because I can't forget that what we saw from him in the first couple of games was good. Mm-hmm. You know, it was good, and Giroud mania had sort of gripped the fan base, and I hope he can, over the next 2 weeks, put this back problem behind him and still give us a decent amount of games. But you're right, the signs aren't great for him or Ibra at the moment, and the fact that Rebic is being preferred still over Pellegrini, I think says a lot about where he's at in terms of his adaptation. I think that the budget might be there for us to make a big signing, not like a huge name like a Bernardo Silva or whatever, but somebody who can come in and make a difference in the starting 11, because Gazidis said in a recent interview that we're meeting with UEFA this month to talk about the settlement, which basically what's holding us back from spending, because we're still being sort of punished for that Chinese ownership in 2017. But the idea is that we'll talk to them and say, look, our accounts have improved despite COVID, and UEFA will say, essentially. Okay, well done, lads. We're not going to look as scrutinously at you now. And then we might, because we know Elliot have the money, you know, they're on about buying Toshiba for however many billion. The money's definitely there if they want it, but they just know that we'd be slapped very firmly on the wrist if we went out and spent 100 million in a window because UEFA are watching us. But the idea is that by the end of this month, they might have turned their eyes towards other clubs rather than us. So yeah, I would like to see a striker. I think we might wait on that striker signing until next summer. But that's just a gut feeling based on the fact that we've got three in the squad at the moment, plus Rebic if needed. Yeah, we don't know how many games they're all going to give us, but it might be enough just to get us through the season. But then if we're like 5 points clear at the top or something come January and there's an obvious signing to make, then that might be it. So it'd be interesting with January. Teo Duplass asks, what about the new stadium? Are we still building it with Inter? They're in so much debt right now that they can't possibly be able to pay for the stadium. I'll use this just to give a little news update on the stadium because it came out in the last week that it's going to be Populous, I think, that wins the design. And that's the cathedral one over the two rings, which I like because it draws on actual elements of the city of Milan and it doesn't just look like a regen of Spurs' ground. So I like that one. And I'm still excited about the stadium project. Hopefully, it eventually, you know, the project breaks ground in the next couple of years or whatever, because we know what it's like with bureaucracy in Italy and all the red tape that they've got to get through. The council elections are happening this month. And once that's done and Mayor Sala is expected to stay as the mayor, so that's good news because he's now come around to the idea of the stadium project. And then we can start to push forward with it. As for Inter's financial situation, I think the council is still doing background checks on the finances of both clubs just to make sure that the money's there to put into the project because it's going to be 600 million each to put into it to build it. But also, what I gather, it's not going to be fully funded up front by the two respective ownerships. It's going to be more that real estate companies will put money in as sort of like to get a stake, and then they can trade that back in basically for having their shops in the surrounding shopping centres and stuff, and it'll work more that way than the clubs footing all the money themselves. But I'm sure we'll find out more and more information on that in the next few weeks. But if you're thinking of going to San Siro for the first time, I would say you've probably got 4 years yet. That's just the way it goes in Italy.
Yeah, I was going to say until ground breaks on it, it's not even a thought in my mind, to be honest. I mean, we've been hearing about this new stadium since Barbara Berlusconi was in charge. Like, you know, I mean,
2014.
Babies have been born and could almost drive now, you know, like, it's all good. I'm not too worried about it. Personally, just because I'm a bit of a vindictive soul, I don't want it to share it with Inter. They're a sinking ship right now. I'd rather them keep San Siro, not get any money. Plus, I don't think they could afford to pay us back for their share of the stadium anyways. So, yeah, I'd rather just build it on our own. Elliot needs to buy them and merge the two clubs. How many Scudetto would we be on? We'd top Juventus if we did that.
Elliot are no strangers to hostile takeovers. That's one thing I will say. They've got form for absorbing countries. Inter need to change owners, to be totally honest. By the sounds of it, they're still not in a good financial position. They've posted record losses and sounds like more player sales are on the way. You know,
record for the country.
Italy, and Juve, you know, are nearly three times our loss as well. That just makes me happy and proud. You know, we've been a laughing stock for years because of our financial situation. We're in a position now where we're taking positive, proactive steps. Yeah, we want a trophy to show for that, you know. You don't win trophies with a balance sheet, but you've got to be able to hang on to the players and pay their salaries and stuff, and we're building in a sustainable way, the right way, and I'm happy with that, and it sounds very positive. And the stadium is the next massive step, but I fear that will come for 2 or 3 years, maybe more. But yeah, I think that's it. That's it, bang on an hour pretty much. But it's been an absolute pleasure. We've had a defeat, we've had a win, we've had a lot of refereeing controversy, and now we've got an international break. But yeah, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. It's on the screen if you're watching on YouTube, and Anthony.
Yep, Torgert45. Had a lot of fun. I'm going to grab some coffee, and I'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, check us out on all social media if you haven't already. Like, comment, subscribe on this video. It really helps the algorithms and all that. And yeah, thank you very much if you've made it this far, and we will catch you in a week's time.
Ecco l'Anteante in area di rigore, Anteante, Anteante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce l'ho da buono, ce l'ho da buono, ce l'ho da buono!